and welcome to the podcast made to hopefully make you feel a little bit better about the world and a little bit more connected to the nonprofit world. We are going to be chatting with nonprofit leaders and founders, giving them a platform to share their stories and collaborate with others, because we believe that when we join hands, we can stand that much taller and make the world better. So sit back, plug in, and let's create some good. This is Nonprofit Connect with me, Matt Barnes. Welcome, welcome. It's another episode of Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes.
And Tiffany Pope.
Yeah, but your name's not in the title. My name's in the title.
Oh my gosh, whatever.
It's Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes.
And so what do you
also,
want me to
and
do?
And then also Tiffany Pope's here.
What do you want me to do?
I don't know. Oh man, that just makes me sound like a jerk.
Yeah, because you are. You're so mean to
rude.
Me.
Rude. I am not. I'm so kind to you.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Tiffany just informed me that she wants to be a musician.
I do.
She's done nothing in her life to actually accomplish that goal.
Nope.
But that is really deep down what she wants to do.
Yeah, I would love to be a singer, like just front center of the stage, just singing my heart out, performing my best. I think I'm a good performer.
Okay.
I can't sing. Like my singing abilities. Not good.
Well, I mean,
whatsoever.
You sing around the office all the time, and
I do.
It's not bad. I've never been like, ooh. There are, you know what I mean? There's those people where
that's
they
true.
Sing, and you're like, oh, wow, you really shouldn't do that. That noise that's coming out of you right now, we should find something else for you to do.
Yeah.
I've never thought
okay.
that.
Okay, so you're telling me I could actually do this?
I don't know about that.
So you're telling me I should stop doing what I'm doing and just be a singer?
Well, I mean, I've tried to get you to quit school and just come work here full-time many times, but whatever. My wife says that I'm a terrible influence in your life.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. You know that.
Stacey, not good.
Stacey cares more about you.
She does.
Than she does about me getting the things done that I need done around here, which I need you to do. So I don't understand that.
She cares more about
me. She gets mad at me every time I'm like, Tiff, drop out of school. Just come work here. Whatever. Anyway.
She shuts you down.
She shuts me down hard. Yeah. Especially, she's like, you went to school forever. How do you tell
literally,
somebody else
you have
not
like
to?
20 degrees.
Well, you
I mean,
know.
You don't, but.
I know. Yeah. Anyway. Our guest today has a lot of degrees.
Wow.
Did you see that smooth transition
that
right there?
That was so good.
Nailed it.
That was so good.
She does, though. She got her bachelor's degree at UCLA. She got a doctorate of law at the University of Arizona. James E. Rogers College of Law. I'm just looking at her bio right now, and I'm like, this is one of those like people that is just super impressive.
She's educated.
She was an intern at the Department of Justice.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
And you go, girl.
She's done all kinds of crazy stuff. She worked at a company called The Wonderful Company.
That's just wonderful.
I addressed that in our interview because I'm like, if you're going to name your company The Wonderful Company, it better be pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? So our guest is Emily Kane Miller. She was so impressive. And she's got an organization she's founded called Ethos Giving, which is dedicated to helping other organizations find their purpose and make sizable steps toward social impact. Mm. She has such a great background, and she's putting all that to use now to make an impact on the world and
awesome.
Help organizations make a larger impact than they're currently making and find purpose in what they're doing beyond just what they're doing. If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay, good. So fascinating. This whole thing, like every week I get a new interview and I'm just like fascinated. I learned so much.
Yeah.
So join me after the break here as Emily Kane Miller joins us and opens your mind to new possibilities.
Whoa.
That sounds like a movie trailer.
That was so cool.
Coming this spring. Emily Kane Miller opens your eyes to new possibilities. Rated R. I don't know why.
Except it's not rated
R. It's not rated R.
Nope.
All right. All right. We'll be right back with Emily Kane Miller. Bye-bye. Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes is brought to you by Rogue Creatives. Did you know that your brand has a personality all of its own? Well, it does. Or it should. But maybe it doesn't. How do you know if it does? Here's what you do. Ask yourself. Does the way you describe your organization match the way you describe your branding? Because it really needs to. Why? Because people don't connect with organizations. They just don't. They don't feel connected to them. They feel connected to characters. They feel connected to personality. So it's super important that your brand has a personality that connects with the right people to bring them into your story. And that's what Rogue Creatives is all about. We've developed our very own process called the Strategic Storytelling Framework to define your brand personality and create a brand foundation that will make sure your organization has that main character energy that connects with others and pulls them right into your story. And by the way, it works, and we got the receipts. Our nonprofit clients have seen incredible increases in giving that have allowed them to help even more people and make the world a better place. Get started today by visiting roguecreatives.com/NPC. That's NPC for Nonprofit Connect. You can schedule a free brand consultation and take our free online brand character quiz. And we all know that everybody loves a good online quiz, especially when it's free. So get over there and do that, because it's why not? Why wouldn't you? You love it. It's going to be fun. That's roguecreatives.com/NPC to begin defining your brand character today. There's no commitment or risk for you at all. And honestly, we just can't wait to meet you. We kind of think we could be good friends. I think we could hang out. You could buy us lunch. We can help you with your branding and talk about the shows we're binging or whatever. It'd be nice. Rogue Creatives. Seriously, creative storytelling. All right, on with the show. Well, Emily Kane Miller, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Matt. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, man, thanks for being here. This is great. You've got such an impressive resume, which we can get into in a minute. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, but we start off with random questions. We've got like a list of, I think we're up to like 90 questions now. And then we have a randomizer that picks three. So are you ready?
All right.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Let's dive in. Are you a dog person or a cat person, and why?
Dog person.
Yes. Allergic to cats?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Allergic to cats. What is your comfort show for TV? What's a comfort show you can go back to anytime?
This is such a nerd answer, Matt. And we cut the cord. So we actually don't have TV today. My answer is going to be like circa 2006. And I will say West Wing is my comfort show.
Oh, that's not a nerd answer. That's just quality TV right there. The first four seasons of The West Wing, that's some of the best TV ever made. Except for Mandy in season one. You can just ignore her. She was not great. Yeah.
So there are moments where I like pick an episode because I just want to like cuddle up and pretend that is the world for the day.
Of course. Yes, I could talk about that all day. There's a great, I don't know if you've heard the West Wing Weekly podcast where they went through and rewatched all the episodes and everything. It's a great podcast. You should check it out.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have to check it out. I'm not. That's amazing.
Joshua Molina and a friend of his host it. And then finally, if you could only ever fundraise for one cause, what would it be?
Ooh. That is a hard one, as we'll get into. I'm so heartened by so many causes, but I would probably say education.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, I think it begins and ends with education and people having the resources that they need to really grow their minds and embark into society as whole citizens. And so I think so many of the other things that I care tremendously about, if we could right-size education, would not need the resources that they need today.
Yes. As said on The West Wing, education is the silver bullet.
Way to bring it back.
There you go. See, just bring it right back around. All right.
Awesome.
So you've got a pretty impressive background. You got your bachelor's degree at UCLA, and then you are actually a doctor of law, which means you can fix the law, right?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is always impressive. Tell us your sort of your origin story. Where'd you come from and how'd you get to what you're doing now?
So I grew up in California, surrounded by all sorts of family and people and programming that were focused on making the world a better place. I grew up kind of in that mindset and went to college and ultimately law school to do my part in that work. And at the time when I was studying, I thought that that would be through government service or the nonprofit sector. Fast forward, I was finishing law school. The Great Recession happened. All of the public interest jobs that I was tracking for literally evaporated in like 5 days because the economy had tanked and the public interest sector was hurting tremendously and they weren't bringing on new staffers. And so I had to do a pivot. I was pivoting before pivoting was a thing, and ended up on a very lucky track that brought me into corporate social responsibility and philanthropy at a time when we really needed generosity to do more than it had ever done before, and was able to do that in-house at a place called The Wonderful Company. Started there as a baby lawyer and ended up having this really amazing job where I was running a number of pieces of the impact portfolio that included philanthropy, but also included political engagement, research and development, supply chain management. Like, what are all the ways that a business could do good, and really drank the Kool-Aid that businesses, families can make a difference. and ended up starting a firm that does exactly that. So it was a circuitous sort of accidental route, but I couldn't imagine being anywhere else.
Yeah. Okay. I have to ask before we keep going, the Wonderful Company. I mean, that's an ambitious name for a company. You know, like we were talking the other day about if you have to tell people you're awesome, are you really awesome? Is it as wonderful as it says it is, or is it just trying to be?
No, I would say the name befits the work. So all of the products are healthy food products and some water, some wine, but still like on the spectrum of healthy, good for you. And ultimately, the question that was positioned was, how can we be additive? How can we do paradigm changing work in the communities that our employees and our resources call home? Because if we don't do it, so far, no one has. And so really got to dig in on questions related to education, healthcare, community beautification in super dynamic ways that usually see companies doing, where we were really putting our shoulders to the wheel of the work as a business, as leaders, as philanthropists. So yeah, I think the name suits.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so now though, you are running Ethos Giving. And what does Ethos Giving do? What are you all about?
So talk about a name that you have to stand up for, right? Ethos Giving is our consulting firm. We do social impact services. We work with families and businesses. And as we say, we help people think about social impact in a philanthropy plus model. So similar to what I was doing at Wonderful, it's not just the cash that you can deploy to nonprofits. That's important. But if you're really looking to change the game, there are other tools in your toolkit that are probably just as important, if not more important, from a leadership perspective, a business perspective. So how do you align everything that you have in your toolkit to be a super do-gooder and bring your ethos to the table? And we say anyone can cut a check to give well, it takes ethos. You really have to be spending time thinking about, who am I in the world? What are my opportunities? How can I be more responsible? How can I be more additive? And not just do it once, but do it day in, day out, quarter in, quarter out. And that really takes a game plan. And having done this for almost 20 years now, which is crazy to say because I'm still so young, we've got, I think, a very strong perspective on how to get that done, how to create the scaffolding so that organizations can really run this work with or without a consultant, which is really important for some organizations. They need this to be super lean. So how do we help them just get layups all day long? And ultimately, I think our framing is unique in that our core constituent is the community being served. If you think about a number of other players in this space, their focus is, did we sell more stuff? Did the business's stock go up? Are we monitoring more engagement on social media? Like whatever those metrics are, I think those are important ones. But from our perspective, those are secondary. Our KPIs are, hey, we said we were going to help literacy. Are those kids reading better? And that's our first priority. And then the other stuff ladders up into that question.
That's so great. I think part of my background is organizational leadership. And a lot of what I was doing out of that degree program and when I was doing some consulting is really it's helping people go like, this is who we want to be. And how do we actually create systems to make sure that we are the thing that we say we want to be? Because so many organizations, when you're small, it's easy to kind of focus on what you want to focus on. And as you grow, those things often fall by the wayside. And to put those important values in place to make sure that there's systems so that they're actually happening and that they're taking place. And they can look different, obviously, as you grow. But I think what you're talking about is doing that from a philanthropy standpoint and making sure that those things are actually happening. Am I getting that right?
For sure. I mean, today's companies are telling the world, their investors, their customers, their talent, that they're doing XYZ. So if you're going to make a claim the same way you would for any other product, you have to back that up. And I think that's more true today than it's ever been. I think it's going to be even more true tomorrow. We're not in a moment where people are willing to just say, oh, I trust you. And if you're not being honest about all the kids that you're helping, like, it's cool. That's not where we're at. People are expecting that if A, organizations are doing this, number one, that they have to do it. It's an imperative. But number two, you have to say what you do and do what you say. And so ultimately, I think companies have been generous for a long time. It's not a new idea, but the concept that it is effective and leader-led and has articulable value is newer. And it's okay that it's hard. It's not something that businesses have been doing in a full-throated way for decades. No problem, but now you have to. And so that work of building it into your muscle is really important. And it's what we offer as a service for organizations that need some help.
Nice. I love that. What's your biggest challenge in that when you're working with these organizations?
So I would say the biggest challenge used to be selling in the idea that this work matters. I would say that's not my biggest challenge anymore. Most leaders sort of take on face value that they have to figure out how to show up for whatever they want to call it, CSR, ESG, et cetera. So rarely am I advocating for the concept anymore, but that was true probably 5 years ago. I would say the biggest issue now is that organizations have layered this work in sort of historically in a manner that doesn't make sense. And sometimes we have to unwind things that really matter to a specific person or a specific department because it isn't on point or it's not sustainable or it no longer kind of has like resonance with today's world or customers. So really getting in there in a way that's collaborative, helping people understand that we're here to help grow, not shrink the work. And it may look different than it looked last year, but it's ultimately going to service everyone's goal of creating impact better. And sort of that change management piece is probably the toughest piece. And that's more of like a human psychology matter than anything else. But generally speaking, people are fairly quick to get on board once we kind of explain the method and the thesis.
What do you think changed in the last 5 years? You said that 5 years ago, you had to explain a lot of that stuff and now people get it. I mean, obviously, we went through the pandemic. We've had a lot of crazy world events happening the last 5 years. But what was it that has made it easier for you to, I guess, sell the concept or not have to sell the concept anymore?
Yeah, so certainly world events, COVID for sure, I think just surged generosity, people figuring out how to be of service. I think that really was kind of an opening of people's hearts during COVID. That may or may not still be true depending on the organization and the person. But I think 2020 was a time where people said like, oh, I need help or how can I help? And I think that that has changed organizations often for the better. Certainly all the world events that we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about kind of by specific issue, but there isn't an issue that has been kind of brought into the zeitgeist in big ways where it's coming into work and coming into how people are thinking about how to flex their organizational muscles or think about giving or think about generosity personally or professionally. I probably would say that the biggest difference and one of the reasons that this could even happen in the first place is the generational shift in the workforce. We know millennials are stepping into leadership roles at greater and greater clips because of how old we all are, care about this in a different way and prioritize it in their leadership in a different way, and also feel proud of this work, right? Like most people want to go to their job and feel like they were successful in the things that they identify as powerful. And this generation, millennial leaders, and I not focus on Gen Z, but it's really the people in their 30s that are leading this versus managing it at a deeper level within the team. One of the things that when they go to bed at night and think about, did I do a good job at my job today, is going to be about impact and purpose in a way that just wasn't true. Not a negative or a positive thing, just a reality. Certainly not true for the generation ahead of that. So I do think as more and more members of this generation join C-suite, start companies, are the leaders, are sitting on the boards, it created a real opening. And speaking to somebody who's, you know, you're preaching to a preacher is very different than trying to convince somebody that you're right.
Do you see a challenge or do you see, I guess, millennials leading up at companies where they're in positions of maybe influence, but not necessarily the owners or the people running the company or that type of thing, where because it's a value to them, they're leading up and helping drive the company in that direction? Or is it more where they're able to get in those positions to make decisions?
I would say it's both. Oftentimes, the millennials who are in the positions that we're partnering with that are bringing ethos in, they've specifically been hired because the business has said, hey, we've got to do better at this. Sometimes it's because they care, or sometimes it's because there's a competitor or multiple competitors that are out-indexing them on purpose. And so they're bringing in these leaders. And it's not exclusively from the millennial generation, but I would say often this is sort of the model of the leader who's being brought in. And so this person has been deputized to do this work. It's not like a thing that's happening on the side of their desk. So I would say there's some managing up, but there's also, at least in a number of pieces that I can think of, places that I can think of, this is actually like their raison d'etre within the organization. And so it's managing up, but it's also sort of meeting KPIs.
Yeah. Let's shift a little bit. This podcast is really targeted towards people in the nonprofit space. And so as you're working with these companies and all that, what have you learned or seen that would be really helpful for the nonprofits out there to know and understand?
Great question. And super happy to dig in on any of these. I have three that I came to sort of to this podcast thinking about. The first, and this feels obvious, and I know everybody listening is under-resourced, understaffed, doesn't have enough time. But as somebody who's on the receiving end of these solicitations and has been for almost two decades, time and time again, I see that something doesn't even get past the social impact team's desk because it's not specific or directed. So you are going to send solicitations. I know bulk email or bulk mail is streamlined and definitely faster. Spending the time, especially when you do think that there is actually a good fit, to have at least a tailored sentence or a tailored paragraph that really does say, hey, I spent the time to look at your CSR report, or I listened to your CEO say this thing at this conference, or whatever it is that you are hooking to, really, really matters. It's worth the time. Because ultimately, if it's like, hey, our 501c3 is amazing, trust us, you want to give us your money, go, and it's a fairly generic pitch, that's a very easy thing to recycle. So that's number one. Number two, to the extent that you are able to engage, maybe it's an exploratory coffee or just an early conversation, or you've actually had a partnership for multiple years, having an opportunity, and Q1 is a perfect time to do it, to say, we nonprofit know that you, company, are being asked more and more to identify what value is being created from the CSR department, from the community-based work that you're doing. What are the KPIs that we as the nonprofit could help you index that will help you all do your work better? That maybe make your board impressed. It maybe help you speak to your customers. But we believe our work is super strong. We're giving you kind of what we think is standard issue impact metrics. Let's look at these together, company, and see what resonates with you. And maybe there's something that's not on this page that we could easily give you that would be transformative for this partnership. You essentially, as the nonprofit, become, for lack of a better term, part of the team because you're helping them do their job better. And I don't know that every CSR department is asking for that, but if you offer it, I'm pretty sure 9 times out of 10, somebody would say, thank you for asking. Nobody's ever asking that before, number one. Number two, yes, we really care a lot about junior high and you work with constituents in that bracket. Can you disaggregate the junior high data for us? No problem.
As you're saying this, I'm just thinking, like, my company, Rogue Creatives, we do a lot of marketing and all of that for nonprofits. And a lot of what my focus always is when we're more targeted toward individuals, but is saying, we're not begging for help here. We're offering people an opportunity to join in a story and something that's exciting and amazing that's happening. And so what you're talking about is doing that same thing for these organizations, to go to them and say, like, hey, we're offering, you know, like, it's a partnership. This is a great opportunity for our stories to intersect and for you to become a part of this amazing thing that's happening. And let me help you tell that story in the way that you need to tell it to your board or to your executives or whatever it might be, so that it can be the most impactful it can possibly be. Whereas I think most people, both to individuals and to corporations, take the tact of, hey, we're doing amazing work. Can you help us out? Can you just give us some money? Can you just, you know, throw some support over here? And it's really all about the nonprofit and what you can do for me. But really, when you're bringing stories together and you're joining in a team, it's symbiotic and you have to kind of look out for each other. And if you go in, it's very much about me. It's easy for people to go, yeah, okay, and not care that much either.
100%. And I think just picking up off of that, like, so point number one was don't be generic. Point number two, ask questions, be responsive. And then a third point is, to the extent that you can't do this with every corporate partner, but there are some corporate partners that you really want to stay close to, build roots. So if the only thing that you are engaging with that partner on is a cash grant, great. And maybe it's solid and you get that grant every year, hopefully. Generally speaking, those are the partnerships that you want to foster to say, hey, I've taken a step back and I realize that corporate engagement is so much more than cutting checks. We are so grateful for that money and we don't want to change the money. Are there opportunities for board participation? Are there opportunities, depending on what you do and what the business does, for research and development collaboration, product market testing? This is generalized because I don't know exactly who the nonprofit is and who the company is, but like, let's say it's a sustainability nonprofit that's focused on ocean trash reduction, and somehow that's connected to what the company's doing. Hey, can we all get in a think tank room together and figure out, like, hey, we're component A, you're component B. How can we support each other in our goals of ending microplastics, or, you know, whatever it is? So all day long, if you can really become intertwined with these partnerships, they're going to be more powerful, stickier, and ultimately, going back to this constituent mindset, better for work. Those would be my top three pieces of advice, Matt.
I love that. You came more prepared for this podcast than anyone else has so far. No, our guests have been amazing, but yeah, I mean, you had three things laid out, ready to go there.
Power of three, always with
always
that.
Power of three. No, it's super helpful, I think. And that's the thing. We all get into these, I don't know if rut is too strong of a word, but kind of these routines where it's, okay, do the same thing. And we reach out and we ask for money and we move, you know. But to really stop and re-strategize of what could a partnership look like? I mean, one of my favorite things, because I'm more, I think, creative-minded. And so I love looking at like, okay, what do I have? What do you have? What do you have? If the three of us come together, or the four or the two or the whatever it is, what do we have that when you bring it together, we could do something different and unique that we can only do because we have those things? And I don't think that typically nonprofits are thinking that when they're reaching out to these corporations, they're thinking of what they need. But when you show that and people see that you're collaborating, it's so much more inspiring too. And it helps people, other people want to join in that story. It's kind of that snowball effect.
There are a ton of great examples of this. I think in large part, it's sort of going back to that millennial point. When our parents grew up and went into the workforce, the people who were really, really golden hearted and were like, I have to save the world, went into nonprofit. That was the path. And now I think there are people who are compelled in the exact same way, who will go to any number of places, government organizations, for-profit companies, B Corps, nonprofits, and you have these kindred spirits, these like-minded souls, in all sorts of places. And so when you can match up with them, it's not the conversations that were happening 25 years ago. You really are meeting with somebody who's thinking a lot like you, just different desk with a different kind of paycheck. And that's okay. You can go sit together and say, hey, this is our goal. We all share in common. We all have different tools that we can apply to this. Let's put all the tools on the table and figure out who's best to flex at what and come up with a real plan.
I love it. Any final words of wisdom or thoughts that you're just like, oh, I got to let people know this?
I would ask the question, if I were sitting in this person's chair, how would I receive this, whatever, request, phone call, whatever it is? We talk a lot in our organization about having empathy for our audience and making sure that when we do go out to somebody, we're not speaking at it through the lens of, hey, you live my day and you're steeped in all the things that I'm steeped in. Most of the time, all the folks listening to this podcast are speaking to people who have very different days, who are focused on other things that are driving kind of their emails. So I think having empathy for your audience and really taking the time to think about how something can be received, especially when it's a really important pitch or a really important call, do it from a friend. Speak to your aunt, your neighbor, your whoever who isn't in your job. I'm about to go have a conversation with somebody at this company. Can I just give you my elevator spiel and see how it lands with you? Because they're coming at it from a much more similar perspective to you than to me. And really pressure test that. And it will, I think, create a tremendous amount of value.
Oh, I love that. That's super practical and super helpful. We always end with a few closing questions. And one of them is, if there was someone in the world of nonprofits that you could take to lunch, who would it be?
Oh, so I'm in Los Angeles. One of the main focuses in our community is how to support the unhoused. It's a growing ecosystem that really does need amazing thought leader. So I would try to have lunch with a gentleman named John Massari. He's the head of a group here called People Concern, which is really one of the largest organizations that supports the unhoused. And I would want to sit with him and talk about how he's thinking about that issue right now and how I could be additive in the way that we support our clients to think about that issue.
I love that. That's a great answer. And I love how thoughtful you are about the areas of nonprofits and what's going on out there. Because you talk to some people and it's just like, oh, I'm just doing a job. But, you know, it's clearly you're passionate about this. What part of your job brings you the most joy?
So one of the things that I appreciate about what we do is that we're thinking differently about this work. We are coming at it with a lot of soul. We're very specific. And so I am confident when we work with clients that because our fingerprints are on things, the work is stronger. That said, until we're 18 months in, a year into a project, we don't actually see the fruit of that labor necessarily. And so I love when we're fairly deep into an engagement where we can actually really see, hey, this is how we were benchmarking last year and look at how much stronger the work is this year because we instituted XYZ thing that Emily and Ethos came to the table with. That makes me feel so good because while I'm confident going in that that will be the case until the proof is out there, it's not true yet. And so I love when we can make things better and see the fruit of that labor.
Wonderful. That's awesome. All right, Emily, where can people find you? Where can they find out more about Ethos Giving and pitch yourself?
would love to connect with anybody. We are at www.ethos-giving.com. My email and links are all over that. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm Emily Kane Miller, K-A-N-E, and would love to chat about all things data, measurement, partnerships, and really appreciate you having me on. So thanks so much, Matt.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. And then thanks for being here. And we'll definitely want to keep talking sometime.
Amazing.
All right. Bye-bye. Yes, my friends, we have come to the end of this amazing episode of Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes. You made it! Thank you so much for listening this far. And if you'd like to hear more from Nonprofit Connect, brought to you by Rogue Creatives, make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on so you don't miss out. We don't care which one. It doesn't really matter. Just listen. Just subscribe. Just make it come right into your potholes every week so you can hear what's going on. Also, if you're interested in working with us or want to reach out and tell us how amazing we are, learn more, whatever it is, you can visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. Or just go to roguecreatives.com and you can find the rest. Okay, that's pretty much it. Okay. Bye-bye. Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes is hosted and executive produced by me, Matt Barnes, with an assist by my chaos coordinator, Tiffany Pope. Production is by our amazing friends over at Fame, the B2B podcast agency, along with Belinda Carter-Thompson and the team here at Rogue Creatives. Production lead is Luke Audi at Fame. Writing is by Sam Hollis at Fame and Matt Barnes and Taylor Bolanos from Rogue Creatives. Nemanja Koljaja of Fame is our audio editor, and Arslan Yakub from Fame is our video editor. Creative direction is by Corey Hill of Rogue. Our artwork is designed by Hope O'Kelly and Joshua Marino at Rogue and Ian Salas of Fame. Theme music is composed and performed by Jared Atherton of Chapters. Luke Audi of Fame does our booking and our guest relations. Huge thanks to our amazing guests for joining us for this episode and to all of you incredible listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, and I don't know why you wouldn't have, don't forget to help us spread some good by giving us a good review. Preferably, you know, 5 stars with lots of words saying how amazing we are on whatever platform you're listening on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is. Also, tell your friends and subscribe so we can come straight into your potholes each and every time we have a new episode. For more information about Nonprofit Connect or to join us at a live event here in Orange County, California, visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. We'll catch you next time. This has been a Rogue Creatives production.